Our next speaker is going to be Dr. Niraj Ghassani. He is from Penn State University, where he's an associate professor of surgery and also the president of their Penn State practice plan. He's the director of their multidisciplinary program for liver, pancreas, and foregut tumors. He and I got to know each other on Twitter, where he's very well known and has nearly 10,000 followers. So he's going to talk to us about how to use social media in your department of surgery.
Okay, thank you very much, Susie and Rohan, and to all of you for coming to talk about what I think is a very interesting topic. I wanted to start by telling you my Twitter handle, which is right there, and I need a few more followers to get to 10,000, so feel free to follow me at any point. I don't have any disclosures, but I always say this, I'm a true believer. I do a lot of things on social media, and I really think this is a great way to communicate and be out there, and so, you know, you can take what I say with a grain of salt in the sense that I stand far to the to one side of this podium in terms of these discussions. So we all know that social media is user-generated content. It's shared over the internet. The idea is to promote engagement, sharing, and collaboration. And you know, these are theoretically mom and apple pie things that we all think are wonderful. And I think that a lot of parts of social media are wonderful. But there's a lot of fear out there. There are a lot of concerns. And so hopefully we can address some of those concerns both in this talk and in the remainder of the session. You all know that social media is taking over the world. There are 7.5 billion people in the world, and over half of them use the internet, and close to that number are using social media. And so this is not a passing, you know, fancy. This is something, and it's increasing every year. This is data from January of this year, and each number is up significantly from just 2 years before that. And so these are huge phenomena, and that's why some of these companies have become so powerful because of their reach and scope. And with the power to engage and interact comes a lot of great possibilities. Professionals are no different, and health professionals are no different. So there was kind of a meteoric rise in the number of healthcare professionals on Twitter earlier this decade. Now we can't even keep track of these numbers. You know, the curve stops at 2014. It's really incredible the number of healthcare professionals and organizations who are involved in social media. So when I was asked to talk about what our departments can do, you know, I started to think from a complete perspective, what are the possibilities and so on. I'll tell you that for sure there isn't that much data out there, and so I've taken the privilege of the podium to talk about some of the things I think are possible for us. So our departments and our medical institutions can use social media for information education. Dr. Sullenberg very nicely outlined some of the things that you can do in terms of teaching patients and the lay public about topics in medicine that can be very difficult for them to understand. Of course, it can be used for marketing and branding and online presence and reputation management and all of those things. And I do agree that that's a very important role. Social media can be used for research and for getting patients involved in research. It can be used for outreach and recruitment. If you want to get the best surgeons to come to your institution, you want to have a strong presence so they know what you're all about. And I think from a departmental standpoint, it's being used a lot to celebrate milestones and accomplishments and to talk about what people are doing in the department. And that fits in with number one and number two, but I think that's its own category. Theoretically, you can use social media or other types of media for patient contact, and I think this is where you get into a gray area and where there are significant concerns. But you know, some portals and some health systems have used social sharing apps and text messaging apps to get through to doctors, and it's a new frontier we all have to understand. I won't cover much of that here today. So I think before we understand what hospitals and departments can do, it's better to understand what our patients do. And we all know about Dr. Google. Most adults use the internet, and everybody looks for health information online, right? And we know that the internet is used as a diagnostic tool. It's used to figure out kind of, hey, I got this rash, what might it be? Or I have this lump, could it be a hernia? We know that peer-to-peer healthcare is an important thing. People, as Dr. Sullenberg said, they seek each other out, and online is one of the best places for that, especially for rare diseases. And there's a whole sort of quantified self community out there who are tracking their own data and keeping logs, and everybody, you know, half the people in this room have a Fitbit or something that tells you about yourself. And some of those data may need to go, or you may want them to go to your physician, and you may want to share them and interact with them. And so this is a way to interact through potentially social media sources with your patients. So if we know what patients are doing, we need to know who they trust. And it's still the case, at least in 2018, that they still trust us, the doctors, and second, the hospitals, to give good information and to provide good content online, and they will share that content. So this isn't, they're much less likely to trust the pharmaceutical companies or the insurance companies. So I think that gives us the responsibility to put some of that good content out there. These are very old data. You'll see October of 2011, a fellow named Ed Bennett used to keep this website to show the growth of social media and healthcare. And at that time, there were 1,000 hospitals using Facebook, which was the single biggest platform. They stopped tracking the information about a year later because pretty much every hospital was using it. And so on a hospital level, everybody has a presence in social media. Not only do they all have websites, they all generally have Facebook and other profiles. And so the best data I could find regarding that was this paper from 2014. And you can see the map is pretty well dotted with Facebook pages, a little bit less with Twitter profiles, a little bit less with some of the other media, but everybody, most hospitals use social media. These are some of the data. So by this point, just a few years later, there are 3,300 hospitals with Facebook pages. Almost 90% of hospitals have a presence. 50% have Twitter handles. And social media utilization is variable, with larger urban, private, nonprofit, and teaching hospitals tending to demonstrate more activity. And you know, the question is why that is, but the second question is, do you want to be, you know, in the haves or the have-nots? And so most hospitals have chosen to have a social media presence. When it comes to departments, as I said, there's a lot less data, but you can extrapolate from this what people might do. And so I looked to some of my esteemed colleagues and some of their institutions to see what people are doing. So the Baylor College of Medicine has a Facebook page for the Department of Surgery. What do they do on that Facebook page? They have a very august picture of their faculty, and they have information about the different services they offer. They have patient stories, and they have information about their trainees and some of their accomplishments. It's a lot of rah-rah, a lot of look how wonderful we are, but it's out there, and patients have a chance to see it and to find it. And as we said before, if you're not out there, then someone else may be. Similarly, Texas Tech has a page, and so you can see Dr. Disanayake right in the front, and you can see their august group of equally august group of surgeons, and they have a blog. They have patient stories on the blog. They have talk about what types of innovative things they're doing in terms of novel technologies and so on. And so a lot of departments, especially academic departments, are choosing to be out there. And the question is, you know, what do you choose to put out there and how do you use it? And so we'll talk about that in just a second. The other sort of side note is, what can training programs do on social media? And I think as a department itself, one of the big roles potentially for social media is for your residency and fellowship training program. So again, branding, marketing, online presence, letting the candidates know that you're out there, that you have a great program, well-rounded, wonderful program in pick your specialty, celebrating accomplishments of your department and your trainee and so on. And then what I think is important is really showing diversity, trainee life, balance, and showing that you have a place that's not just a good place to train, but a good place to live and a good place to become the best surgeon you can be, which is so important nowadays. We're realizing that we're not just surgeons, we are complete people, and to prevent burnout and other things, we need to all have other things in our lives. So our own Penn State department has a Twitter handle focused mainly on our residency training program. And so you can see we've got a few thousand followers and are starting to put stuff out there. This is just a few years in the making, and it's a grassroots effort by our residents. And what we do is we celebrate what happens and talk about trainee life, and we talk about milestones, and we talk about people who have podium presentations at the American College of Surgeons Surgical Forum and any other type of presence out there. And so this is a way to kind of get our brand out there and say, hey, this is a great place to train, and we have great people and a good balance. And so I think this is an important thing to consider in your training program for any of you who are chairs or administrators or senior people in training programs. This is an important avenue. So this is the only data I could find about residency training programs and what they do, at least in surgery, out there. And so evaluation of social media presence of ENT programs in the United States, 101 ENT programs, only 30, this is from 2018, the data about a year earlier, were found to have social media sites. So it's not everybody. We'll talk about a little bit about why, maybe in a little bit. Facebook was the most common, as expected, similar to what we saw with hospitals. Facebook is number one, Twitter is second. And interestingly, though, higher-ranked programs, this is based on Doximity residency ranking data, higher-ranked programs are more likely to have a social media presence. So if you're in the first quartile of programs, 40% of those have Facebook profiles. In the last quartile, only 10%. And so, again, you want to decide where you want to be. It's not saying that your Facebook presence represents quality, and the worst program in the world might have a really beautiful Facebook page, but there is some desire to kind of be in the haves rather than the have-nots, and so I think that's important. So the last part of my talk is to kind of talk about the risks. So we all know that social media is important, potentially, and Dr. Todd will tell us all the bad things that can happen, but I think we just have to be careful, and so this is a simple social media policy that is put out by a cardiologist from the Mayo Clinic, their head of their social media center. Don't do things that your mother told you not to do, right, and on social media, and if you can't say things in a crowded room, don't say them on social media. Some colleagues and I were grateful to be part of a panel run by the Residents and Associates Society of the college to put out best practices for surgeon social media use. And now this is personal best practices, but I think it applies to departments and residency programs as well. And we'll talk about some of the differences in just a second. But the recommendations are, you know, this was our sort of top line recommendations. Use social media, but don't use it as a tool for physician-patient communication. Protect patients' identity. Be aware of the policies. And this is where it really gets in to why programs and departments may or may not use social media, is making sure you don't interfere with your hospital and keep things parallel in terms of the presence. Avoid posting content that has negative consequences. Avoid online discussions about financial conflicts of interest, defamatory statements, et cetera, et cetera. You can read the list, but some of these are good practices if you're going to have an institutional page as well. So I'll close with a few points of etiquette. If you have pictures, they need to be professional. If you have avatars, other things on your presence, this is not only for personal pages, but for a departmental presence. They have to qualify and fit with your institution's policies. If you have a presence, you have to be present. You have to monitor it. You have to be around. There's no point having an empty shell of a page. Really, it's all about interaction. Be relevant to patients' concerns. So if you're going to put information, patient stories up there, make sure that they're accessible and people can understand them and can see themselves in those stories. Never talk about patient issues without express consent and following HIPAA guidelines, of course. Patients will try to contact you or talk about you on social media, and so you need to have a policy and a plan in advance for what's going to happen. Keep it professional and assume that everything is forever. So what I would say in closing is develop a social media strategy in advance and make sure it fits with your hospital, your department. is every division going to have their own separate Facebook page? Is everybody going to do things separately? And then how do you keep the branding similar and keep the same message? Or are you going to have one hospital page? So I think one of the reasons a lot of departments don't have their own pages is because the hospitals have them and they feature departmental content. So you have to figure that out and make sure it's in line with what your university and your hospital does. Decide how you're going to respond to patient requests and or patient content. If they say, hey, I had a terrible experience with this doctor, what are you going to do about that and how are you going to respond? Manage your online reputation with professional, informative, and high quality data, tweets, and posts. And that's, I think, the best way to dilute out some of the bad stuff. And then we all know that there's some other things, why we all use Twitter and social media rather than some of the positive things. So keep in mind, there are other uses. I'm happy to take questions at the end, and thank you very much for the podium.